Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
Everyone, this is Jacob Minnig, host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today we have an amazing special episode for all of you. We have special guest Diana Londoño. Diana is a medical doctor, and she's a significant passion for helping all medical doctors deal with all types of anxiety, depression, stress, burnout, overall just self-care. And many times doctors don't have a lot of people or programs to attend to or go to when they're dealing with these types of mental health crisis, and she wants to be their outlet. Diana is the founder of the PhysicianCoachSupport.com network. She is a certified life coach, writer, speaker, and a live stream podcaster. In this amazing special episode, she will get into many different ways physicians can get self-care as well as attend and engage certain outlets to, again, help them with their burnout. I cannot wait to get the show started. So without further ado, let's begin. Well, Diana, thank you so much for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Jacob. I'm grateful to be here and to share some information and some tools for your audience. So thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and I think you're calling from the West Coast, right?
Yes, from Los Angeles, yes.
Okay. And the weather's going good over there?
Well, usually it's been okay. You know, everybody wants Southern California mm-hmm. weather, but it's been mm-hmm. raining, and it really feels like Seattle. It's been rain. But we need it because it really, mm-hmm. it's a desert here in a way, and there's always, you know, drought. So we're actually happy to have some rain. So we're excited that we're getting some of our water reserves up.
It's actually raining here right now in Minnesota. Oh, wow. And we're actually supposed to get like another snowstorm tonight.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's like our fifth or sixth one. Yeah. You don't get snow.
Yeah. Although we got hail not too long ago. And we're like, what? There's hail in it.
You got hail. Okay.
Yeah, it was fun. We're like, oh my God, this is different. But yeah, now we've just been in the rain.
You have kids, right?
Yes, I have two little kids.
Yeah. And they're in school, right?
Correct.
If you guys got like 2 inches of snow, would school be shut down?
Probably, because I don't think they've ever seen it. They're just like, what is this? We got to stop this.
What's this foreign stuff?
Yeah, what is this white stuff on the floor? Probably. They should. It should be like a Hallmark day that never happened. So,
oh, yeah.
If you get it, we need to have a day off.
You know, that makes sense. That does. Again, Diana, I've said this before, but again, I'm super excited to have you on the show. I know we're going to get into a lot of great, really informative stuff. So I really appreciate your knowledge and presence here, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, of course. Let's get into it. Anything you need.
Well, right off the bat, so from what I know, you grew up in Mexico City, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
In that time frame of your life, did you have the motivation to be a doctor growing up in Mexico City, or did the motivation come after?
No, I mean, I moved to the United States when I was 12. So, but it really didn't come till I was probably around, I guess it was in college that I decided I wanted to do that. I was not that kid that wanted to be a doctor since I was five, or my parents were doctors and said, you should be a doctor, or anything like that. So it just really came probably after actually my father was diagnosed, although it was never really spoken about, you know, in the culture, let's say, with metastatic prostate cancer. So he exhibited, you know, symptoms of metastatic prostate cancer that wasn't treated, which is you become paralyzed. And so, you know, he sort of dealt with that. It was very hush-hush, again, because in some cultures, people don't want to talk about prostates or genitals or sex or things like that. So it was not talked about. And I had, my father and my mother split up. So I would go to Mexico to see him. And, you know, the time before that, he was totally healthy, vibrant, normal. And then when I went to see him, he showed up in the airport, with, you know, in a wheelchair. And I'm like, it looked really just, you know, thin and ill. So it really was a big change. And then I really saw what illness can do to a person in terms of like their dignity and their, you know, sort of when we become a patient, if you've ever been in a hospital, you know, they kind of take everything away from you, your clothes, your makeup, your hairbrush, and you're just, you have this ugly gown that really kind of dehumanizes you in some ways. And it takes away the pride of people of, you know, sort of what makes them sort of feel comfortable, let's say. So I saw that because my father was very, you know, good looking and very vibrant and really charismatic. And so I saw sort of that shift during illness. And it really, you know, made me kind of pause and think, you know, what happens in illness? Because I had never really been exposed to that. And how can we, as, you know, people in medicine and as a physician, you know, really think about that as we maybe just not focus on a disease, but sort of think about the whole person and how everything affects, you know, the care you seek or don't seek, you know, beliefs you have or don't have, and what you may find helpful or not, depending on sort of what you fear or what you believe. And that really can either direct you to get or not get care. So it just really started from that. When I came back to the States, I really then started to say, okay, well, you know, how could I do this? How do you get to med school? I mean, I had never really been exposed to it. And I just started the process and, you know, went from there.
So did you want to be a doctor to like help diseases like that too?
No, I mean, ironically, you know, it's urological and I'm a urologist. So, I mean, is it subconscious? Who knows? I don't really think it was per se, but I actually thought I wanted to be a primary care doctor because when I started the process, I volunteered with primary care doctors by my college. And I thought that's what it is. Once I really got into med school, I said, absolutely not. It's not my personality. But I can definitely appreciate and I'm very grateful for primary care doctors, but it's just not sort of my personality. So, you know, I just really thought it's interesting, you know, something challenging. I like challenges. I want to do something difficult. And it is difficult to go through it. And I really like the challenge. And I, you know, you want to help people, all that kind of stuff that people go into, hopefully. So that's really how it really started. And, you know, just kind of once you commit, you really have to go because it's a lot of, you know, work and studying and, you know, time away to focus on that. So you really have to be committed. You can't be sort of wishy-washy.
Now, but is it also true that you don't really get a choice of what you get into because a lot of it is based on your med school scores?
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, for residency, for your specialty, yeah, and in some ways, I mean, if some are more competitive. So if you're really looking for a very competitive specialty and urology is or orthopedics or dermatology.
Surgery.
Yeah, if your scores are not that high, I mean, it's going to be challenging that you could match because that's how it works. You have to kind of match. So you know, if you don't have those scores, then, you know, you may be thinking of other specialties or you can still try knowing you may not match and you may have to kind of do it again. So yes, absolutely. Your scores have to be a certain level for certain specialties. You're right about that.
And then you ultimately again decided on urology.
Correct. Yeah. Right. So at the end of the day, it was urology, but it's mostly my personality and I like surgery. And it's sort of the more benign type of surgical specialties, not too, you know, overwhelmed with your personal life. There's not as many emergencies in the middle of the night. And people tend to be pretty happy, or at least they used to be pretty happy, because lately, this past year, urology was named as the most stressful job, you know, like in America or something, more than, you know, air traffic controller, which I find that hard to believe. But it was named as that. I think it was Newsweek, if I remember. But, you know, so before that, people were happy-go-lucky. They like to operate. Mm-hmm. And we also see a lot of patients in the office, you know, as well. So it had a little bit of combination of, you know, both things, not just surgery all night or having to be up all night delivering babies as a, you know, obstetrician. So just different lifestyles where you could hopefully have a little bit of a balance.
And there's a very small percentage that are women. And I'm going to assume you're one of the few women in residency that were in that program.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The numbers are slowly increasing, but we're 10%. So of all the urologists in the United States, women make up 10%. If you count Latinas and women, it's like 0.5%. So it's really low. So there's not a lot of us, but we're definitely a very strong, mighty, great group of women. And, you know, overall, I think the men also are, you know, it's a great group as well. You know, just sometimes there's some specialties that it may not be as supportive. And I do find that for urology, it hasn't been my experience where it was not a, you know, a pleasant experience.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in the grand scheme of getting to like stress, depression, like self-care, did you personally have any issues with that when you were, let's say, pre-med, med school, or residency? Did you ever go through high levels of stress to get good grades or to do a good job? Or
yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I never, even though there was all, you know, a lot of time to, you know, study or have the high scores or work long hours, I really never experienced that or chronic stress leading to burnout, which is what burnout really is. So I didn't, but it definitely is there. Of course, we know even for urology residents that are going through training, they just did a recent study and they said it was like 67% of like the second or third year residents were having symptoms of burnout and burned out. That's a lot. That's a lot of residents that are suffering at that stage of their career where they haven't even finished, you know, their training. So it's definitely there. It's just, I didn't experience it, but I'm sure others did. But, you know, it didn't mean it didn't happen, because when I finished my training, it definitely did happen twice. So I definitely went through that. And we were talking before, I mean, many, many of the physicians are dealing with this, you know, more than really 60%, 65% of, you know, like the front line, which is emergency, primary care, are dealing with, you know, burnout. And then it also is associated with, yeah, anxiety, depression, suicide ideations. So 400 plus complete suicide, that's a lot of physicians. Mm-hmm. But of the ones that they surveyed, that they asked about 13,000 of them, you know, all these questions, you know, there was a large percentage that, you know, attempted suicide. And that's, you know, also scary. So about 13% had attempted suicide. So if you're in a state of contemplating suicide, attempting suicide, you know, you're not in a good place to be taking care of others, because you're just really thinking how you're going to end your life that day. So it really affects when you're the patient. And we're patients too as physicians. And believe me, it can be pretty rough, you know, when you're on the other side, but also when you're living it. So I see both sides of the problem.
Where do you think the mindset is? Let's say if you're like a medical school intern or you're in residency and you're not fully into the position yet, do you think they might have the mindset of, okay, I'm getting burnt out, I'm going through depression or anxiety, like symptoms of my everyday life, but I don't want to say anything because I don't want my bosses and my leaders to know that I cannot handle the job. I just got to suck it up and try to get through it to show them I can handle it.
Yeah, it's ingrained that that's how it should be, actually. I mean, it's not even that they're thinking. It's like it's kind of said out loud. It's sort of unspoken and at the same time said that, yeah, you just put your head down. Yeah, just push through it. You know, you're just going to get through it. Everybody else did it. I had it worse than you, so you suffer. There's a lot of that. To me, it was always like, if I had something that was not pleasant, I would never want to do that to the next person coming through. I would want to make it better. But not everybody has that mindset. And I would want to protect my junior residents, and I would want them to go home early or go on time and not stay there longer than they have to. But that's not always the mindset. So absolutely, you know, that is sort of taught and told that, yeah, you just kind of suck through it. It was way worse in my day. I mean, it's crazy. It's really backwards. So I don't blame them. I mean, you know, medicine is very hierarchical. So it's like, you know, sort of shit runs downhill. And if you're at the lower end, you kind of get the worst. And it really should be the opposite. The hierarchy should be opposite, where we take care the most of the, you know, youngest, really, just like if it was your children. Mm-hmm. Really would take care of little kids and make sure their needs are met. And I don't know why we don't sort of translate that in training. So in training, you know, you can't pee, you can't eat. You know, you just can't take a break, and it's ridiculous. Like, why can't I pee? Why do I have to stand for 8 hours? Like, what is the prize I'm going to win? Because there is no prize.
Yeah.
And again, if it was your children, you would never have them hold or pee for hours and hours or not feed them. You wouldn't do that. But somehow we think it's okay for training and for physicians. You know, it's really mind blowing to me. And it always was. And when I was going through it, I said, I'm not doing this, or I'm not lying. Before the hours changed, we had requirements of how many hours you could, quote unquote, work. Now the hours have changed of limits. But before, you know, you had to lie about it, even though there was way more than there is now. And I said, I'm not doing that. I mean, that's on you, not on me. This is what I worked and this is what happened. And the problem seems to be yours, not mine, you know. But again, not everybody sort of had the courage to do so. And I understand it. But I just didn't feel like that was authentic to me, to be quiet or to put up with, you know, abusive sort of behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah, I struggle with the same thing regarding the mental health like therapy field. Like, they put a lot of restriction on us. They make a certain hour requirement for you to be licensed. You need 4,000 hours, this, that. And I'm really advocating to change that because I want there to be therapists in the future, and I want to take care of the young therapists because I don't want them to go through the same struggles as I do. There's like an evil sense of it. It's just wrong. It's not the right thing to do. So I don't like the mentality of, again, like you said, oh, I went through it, so you're going to go through the pain just because this is the way it has to be. It's like, no, I want to help the future because they are the future. What's going to happen when we're gone or whatever? Like, we need them to take our place. We want our system to be better than it was before. If we keep this egotistical mindset, you know, nothing's ever going to get better.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and I mean, so many have left. We know in this last year, 100,000 physicians left. You know, we had 1 million physicians in the U.S., already a shortage, 100,000 have left. In the next couple of years, I think the latest data was, you know, 1 in 5 or 2 in 5 are planning to leave or reduce hours. You know, this is a problem. We don't do anything until we're in a complete emergency, but it really, we are getting there. And if you're trying to get a doctor's appointment, and again, even as a physician, I try to get a primary doctor. It was like 4 month wait to see a primary doctor. And I'm like, what do you mean? Or you want to get an MRI now, a CT scan, it's like 3 months for routine CT scans. So, you know, once people start seeing like, this is not good, but until it doesn't affect you, you pretend it doesn't happen, but it is definitely happening. And, you know, again, we've gone through COVID. There's so much PTSD from that. People are just barely trying to, you know, recover or realize all this trauma that has been stored in their body that they're processing. And we're seeing the effects of that. So, you know, it's really important. And mental health should really be top priority, you know, really in any country. But it isn't. And it definitely isn't here. You know, without mental health, you will have no physical health. You will have no spiritual health. So that's really, really important. But we just think it's just like, you know, on the side, an afterthought.
Do you think part of the issue is like with the lack of physicians is like, there's just not enough seats in medical school. Or there's not enough, like medical school is not allowing enough people.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a huge part of it as well. So there's not enough physicians getting trained. They put a cap on that for some insane reason. And so if you're not training more, then you're not going to keep up with the demand of, you know, that there is, especially with so many, you know, the baby boomers and people getting older, needing more complex care. People live longer and they, you know, have more medical issues. It's not like we're getting healthier either. Even though we live longer, we have a lot more complex medical issues. We are able to prolong life, but it's not a great quality of life in many instances. So, you know, now we have shortage and we're not changing exactly that problem that we're not training enough. And even just recently, there's a thing called the match where people match into their specialty after medical school. And the emergency physicians, there were so many spots that were not filled because people were saying, I'm not going to go into emergency medicine. And so even those spots are not going to be filled. There's going to be less people training, less people covering the expected coverage of patients on ERs are already, you know, run down without not enough coverage as it is today. And that's a big problem. So we're seeing that now today. I mean, we just had this and that has really big ripple effect down the line. So yeah, there's a lot of systemic things that have to be changed. And that's a great point of that. Absolutely. Because then they're leaving, we're not training enough and training takes a long time, you know, and we just don't have enough people. So, you know, we can't clone physicians and we go through a lot of training for a reason, you know, even after all the training we did, you know, I did 6 years of residency for med school. There's a lot to know. And, you know, training somebody for a couple of years, saying it's equal to a physician, that's not really, you know, true. And that really, you know, it's a concern. You know, there's a role for mid-levels for sure, but not one to be replaceable or equal to a physician. And that offends a lot of people, and that gets people very angry, and people send a lot of hate mail and messages. But, you know, the truth is, like, it's not the same. We would never allow a resident physician that has been for 2 years training to see the patients independently without supervision. Never. But then we think it's okay for a PA for 2 years training. So why is it okay in one, not the other? It doesn't make sense. Like, the rules have to be the same if that's the case. So, you know, and why don't we allow it? Because you don't know enough. You really just don't know enough as a medical student after 2 years to take care of everything. I mean, even after today, I learned stuff all the time. No matter how many times I see the same sort of symptoms, there's always something different. There's always something that doesn't fit. There's something I'm surprised about every single time. And it takes years to kind of put that puzzle together that something's not right. You know, what else could it be? What am I missing? You know, something's going on. It takes years, you know. So I think it's sort of sad to see that and think it's okay. And this is a way to get about the problem that there's not enough doctors.
Well, in some evil way, do you think it's more of like a hospital financial thing that's causing a lot of this? You know, let's just be honest. It's
I think anything really is about where is the money and follow the money. So when you follow money in anything, you really get the answer. So if you follow the money, physicians are paid a certain amount, let's say, and a PA, nurse practitioner, is going to keep paid 1/3 of that, 1/4 of that.
Like, so a little over six figures, right? Like 110, 120.
Correct. So then you're going to then pay much less and say that it's equal. So you're paying less. And if you don't know enough of things, then you don't know, like, you start ordering a lot of tests because you don't know the answer. Well, oh, belly pain, let's order CT and MRI and, you know, billion blood tests. And it's kind of like shotgun, like, let's see what sticks. Let's see what comes up. And then when it comes up, you actually may not know what to do with it. So you refer to specialists. So you're doing this within the system. So you refer within the system, more CTs, more things. It's money, 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 money. It's very expensive tests, CT scans, MRIs. And so, I mean, just I've seen that in my experience that I see people doing that. And I'm like, well, what are you looking for? Like, if you order a test, you have to be asking, like, what information I'm going to get and how will that change my management? But if you don't know what you're looking for,
or how to read it,
or what to do with it, then what are you doing and why are you doing that? So again, that adds a lot more money to the system. And of course, this is a cash cow, 100%. So I agree with that, you know, very much. And again, people also get upset about that, but that's okay. They can get upset, but that is, you know, a reality of what's happening at the back end of all this.
Absolutely. So another thing I wanted to ask, you know, when early in your career, like, I don't know, did you work at a hospital ever or?
I was hospital employed at the beginning when I got out of residency. Hospital employed.
Was there any like employee assistant programs to like help staff with any type of mental health or addiction issues, like going through like stress, just in case of burnout, anywhere where y'all could like go for help?
There's not. And even now, I mean, there really isn't. I mean, and some of the, I mean, some places do have some programs, but then some people have programs that, let's say, like there's like Lyra or there's other like online things, but then they are, the information, even though they don't say what you're talking about, the information gets relayed back to HR that this physician or this person used it. And that's always gets very tricky because if HR, say, knows that you're using something for assistance for any mental health and there's any issues that come up with your performance, which could be very likely when you're in burnout, because when you're in burnout, you're angry, you're reactive, you're less empathetic, you know, you're going to make errors. So there may be real things that come up because of the state of stress you're in. So then complaints happen. And so you get, let's say, flagged. And then they also start looking to see, oh, you're getting help. So pretty soon, it could be very easily that maybe they suggest that, you know, maybe you need to move on to a different job or take time off or who knows, you know. So people are very afraid then to seek care in their own institution because of these real things that are there. Even if they have these programs, I mean, how confidential are these programs? Who knows, you know, who is it HR that knows that you're using it? Is it truly there to help you? You know, it's hard to know. So, but usually, there's not. And the ones that are there sometimes, you know, fall a little bit flat.
Yeah, and I can imagine too, which is funny. You figure like HR would want to help you get your
Yeah, you
job.
think so, but at the end of the day, HR works for the institution. So they want to protect the institution. Their number one priority it is actually to protect the institution that is hiring HR. That is their boss. So you would think that they want to help the employees as well. But at the end of the day, it's like I think they, you know, the institution is number one, no matter what. And they have to protect their losses and they have to protect the company. So I do think that that goes first. And then second is, you know, the employees. But you would hope so, but I don't think realistically that truly can be. There's a conflict of interest in some way.
Do you also feel like another reason why a doctor would not want to come out like with burnout is due to maybe a hindrance in their reputation?
Of course, I mean, nobody likes to openly say I'm depressed. Nobody openly wants to say, obviously, I'm suicidal. And, you know, if you are that and you work for an institution, let me tell you, they're going to like get you out of the job in a second. You're going to be pulled out. And yeah, there's going to be like shame and blame. And, you know, then they're going to start scrutinizing everything. And, you know,
So shame, you mentioned shame. So you're a bad person because you're going through issues. That is you. Like that's what shame is.
well,
How dare you have problems in life? How dare you get burned out? Shame
yeah.
on
And
you.
the thing is, like, you're taught to be like a perfectionist, and many
A
people.
robot. You're a robot. It's like I'm getting the sense of a robot right now.
It is a robot because you have to be perfect. There's no errors because, of course, the alternative of an error is somebody's life at stake. Somebody that has a bad outcome because you make an error. There's a wrong medication. There's a wrong side surgery. There's a lot of stuff when there's an error, and there's many errors in medicine. Let's not pretend there aren't. There's
Or what if
many.
it's just a tough case, a tough patient, and it has nothing to do with you? It's just things happen, right, in medicine. There's nothing you could do about it.
That's true too. I mean, there. If you're a surgeon, for example, and you don't have complications, then you're probably not operating enough because they're going to happen. You know, it's not anything about technically. You can be the master of the surgery and everything can go well, but there can still be a complication. That is a risk that happens to all of us.
Or I can imagine you torturing yourself mentally, like. Was it something that just randomly happened, or was it me?
Correct. Yeah. You
That's,
shame
yeah.
yourself. You this is imposter. Like I'm not good enough. And then you really start like getting scared. I don't want to do this again. And then that's really real. When you get a bad complication or sometimes two in a row of the same surgery, you're like, I don't want to do that again. Like I'm just gonna step back and let somebody else, like my colleagues, do that surgery. Because then yeah, you were like, who was it? Was it me? Am I technically good enough? You know, and so yeah, it starts spiraling into a lot of things. But we're taught to be perfect. If you're not, there's something wrong with you. Because again, you have to be like the top to get into medical school. You have to be top to get into these difficult specialties. So the alternative is you're just not good enough. That's what is you're kind of told. And so then, of course, if something like that, you admit depression, anxiety, I mean, then there's something wrong. You're broken. Something's wrong with you. And it's not per se that something is wrong with you. I think something is wrong with the system that is not conducive to support mental health, to support wellness, to support, you know, time off. How many physicians, I mean, when my colleague was just on vacation, I didn't realize that. I texted him. He said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm on vacation." And I said, "Oh, well, don't worry. Like, I'll talk to you in a week." He's like, "No, it's okay. You can tell me. I'm in Hawaii." I'm like, no. Like, this can wait. It doesn't matter. What are you going to do about it in Hawaii? Please spend time with your family, disconnect, and then this will be taken care of in a week. I mean, there's people covering you. So the physicians have this mentality. The whole place thinks it's okay to text people when they know they're on vacation, you know, to answer emails. This culture is like,
You
you know,
know, it's fun.
bad.
I listen to a lot of audiobooks on medical doctors, especially going through med school and residency, and there's this one doctor who became an alcoholic, and he was telling his story about how he kind of got through it, overcame it. But he's talking about the burnout system. I forgot what type of surgeon he was, but he was on vacation with his fiance. He was a resident and he was just burnt out. He needed this vacation. I think they went to Disney World or whatever. And he's walking, and then like the head of the department called him. He got information on the doctor's patient, the residency's patient. It was a terminal cancer, terminal illness. So the supervisor told him, okay, so yeah, here's the terminal illness. You need to call your patient right now. Tell them about the terminal illness. And I'm it's like he's on vacation right now with his fiance, yet you're telling him, okay, he has to call his patient and tell him that you have a terminal cancer.
Yeah.
And that's what blew him up. That's what blew him mentally up. Just
That's what like tips you over the edge, because you can't even make this stuff up. And then there's that whole thing about boundaries too, that first of all, we're not taught, and we're many people in medicine, you know, they want to help people, but they're people pleasers. So, you know, you're a people pleaser. You don't want to ruffle feathers. You don't want people to be upset. So instead of saying no, like I will call them when I get back, or no, this is not appropriate, or I'm sorry, I'm on vacation. Please have this doctor call them that is covering, or something else. You know, you don't speak up, and then you do it. And then that really eats you up in the soul, because it's not right. And you know, it's not right, but you do it anyway. And that breeds resentment and anger and frustration. Mm-hmm. All these things are not good emotions. They're just building up in you until you blow up. So yeah, a lot of that is boundaries. We don't set boundaries. We don't say, oh, like my colleague could have told me, oh, I'm sorry, I'm on vacation. Okay. You know, and then that's it. And, but he did. I mean, it was like, I had to beg him to say, no, no, no. Like, I will not tell you about the patient. You don't need to know. So it goes both ways. And so sometimes physicians have to help themselves and have to speak up and have to put boundaries and have to say, this is not correct. I'm not going to do this. Or my time is valuable. I'm valuable. You know, this is the line that has to be drawn.
And if you don't draw that line, they're going to assume it's okay the next time. And the next time you draw it.
Exactly. And, you know, and then people think we are robots. I mean, I had a patient that was upset at me or the daughter because I was getting frustrated. And then, you know, she said, oh, I'm sorry, but like, why are you frustrated? Because I'm human, because I'm not a robot. You know, I am a human being and I have emotions. And then, yes, I could be a physician, but that doesn't say I don't have a right to be frustrated, angry, you know, about any of it, because I'm human. And people get really uncomfortable with that when a physician is just not a robot that says yes to everything and I'll do anything for you at any time of the day and night. And it's like, you know, these things have to be sort of taught to the patients and the families and to the system. They're like, we're human. I have emotions. Mm-hmm. These are my boundaries. And that's what it is. And again, people get really uncomfortable, like very uncomfortable. And I'm like, it seems to be, you know, your discomfort, not mine. I'm okay with the fact that I'm frustrated, but you are very uncomfortable and you're going to have to figure that out, you know? And it's not because it's like, it's uncaring. It's just, you know, like I'm human. Mm-hmm. I have emotions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, what I also know too is you're now a certified life coach.
Correct. Yeah.
What motivates you to do that? I'm assuming.
When I was going through burnout twice, which is chronic stress. And, you know, you can get there either by, you know, fear or worry or stress. I mean, some people tell me, oh, I'm not stressed, but they're always worried. So it's the same stuff. You're activating that, you know, sympathetic, that stress response in your body, and all that fear, worry, stress, it's bathing your whole body. And it's really, every cell in your body is going to get bathed in it and it's going to become your illness, your disease. Mm-hmm. It's going to give you body pains. It's going to give you insomnia. It's going to give you, you know, stress grinding of your teeth. You're going to get reflux. You're going to get asthma. You're going to get, you know, intestinal problems. You're not digesting your food well. Maybe you get diarrhea. Maybe you get constipation. Make it pelvic pain, joint pain, you know, autoimmune diseases, and even like really cancer comes from this chronic stress that we just think is normal. And it's not, because it becomes our disease. So for me, I had all those things that I just mentioned. I mean, I really literally developed asthma at 42 years old. How do you do that? Well, with chronic inflammation, you get asthma, reflux, some of the medications, all that. So I was at that point and I was trying to figure out, well, how do I get out of it? You know, what do I need to do? And I
can also ask, did this also affect your husband, your family too? Do they see it in you?
I mean, my husband basically just told me, like, you know, you really have become really negative, you know, like you really are always negative about everything. And that's what you become, a negative mindset all the way, like a victim mindset. Oh, it's everybody's doing this to me, or everybody is. Mm. You know, they're attacking me, or they're hurting me, and it really isn't. Like, you decide, you know, your life and how you react to the circumstance, and you can become a creator.
How was your reaction to your husband when he said that, though, in the moment?
In the moment, I rolled my eyeballs way to the back of my head, and I was like, no. And then I turned around, and, you know, when I had my back kind of to him, I'm like, well, maybe that it could be true, you know, in my head. And I'm like, is there truth to that? And, you know, it stings and it's not fun and it's not pleasant, but there was truth to that. Absolutely.
It was a blind spot maybe to you. It was a blind spot that maybe you need someone else around you to like to let you know.
And many times that that's the number one thing is awareness. We don't know we're in burnout. We don't know where to be negative. Like somebody has to point it out many times. And sometimes as a colleague, sometimes that is HR because you have so many complaints of being angry that they send you to anger management. And then you realize you're in burnout. Maybe it's a physician. Maybe it's your spouse or your kids or things like that that tell you, like, why are you always angry? Or, you know, why are you not engaged? Why are you just kind of, you know, apathetic? They'll point it out. And so, yeah, it was definitely pointed out. It was not pleasant. And then I had to really think about it and say, yeah, okay, this is not good. Something's going on. So I started to learn about coaching. I started to kind of feel better, think better, a little more positive. And then I thought, well, you know, I probably need to get coached, you know, or do a coaching program. And then I thought, well, if I could do a coaching program or become a coach, you know, it's a little more for sure. But then I have the skills and I can use them at any time in my life. So I decided to become a life coach. And while I was going through the training, I thought, well, we have to kind of learn these skills with other people that we have to coach. And physicians are in a terrible place because we know burnout is, you know, off the charts. So why don't I create something where we can have, you know, physicians or life coaches like help others that may be in a need and do like a support line. And there's a similar support line that is by psychiatrists and it's a phone line. And I had even used it during COVID. And I thought, well, I'm not a psychiatrist for sure, but now I'm a life coach. And again, could use that. And the way I did it is it's called physiciancoachsupport.com. And it's via Zoom because that's the way that most people nowadays do coaching, especially with COVID. We do everything through Zoom. Through Zoom, you make an appointment. And there's a certified life coach who's a physician just there to support you with anything. And we are there for support, but using life coaching skills to talk about it, which is different than a therapist, which is different than a friend or a mentor. I mean, there are just different ways to kind of get to the situation. You know, if you talk to a friend about, let's say, your boss, you know, and you say, oh, I hate my boss. He's terrible. He's torturing me. Your friend's going to be like, oh, yeah, totally. I hate that guy too. You know, and that's okay. That can be helpful, but it doesn't really get you to maybe like have a little awareness of like, you know, what truly is going on or what can you do to change the situation or how can you react to it a little differently. And, you know, that's a way that a coach can help you, you know, put a mirror to the situation, kind of poke holes in your statements. Like, is that really true? Is that really true? What's happening? Like, why are we thinking that? How can we think about this differently? And then really move on or again, come up with an action plan that can get you to a different, you know, result. So that's different again than a therapist or a friend or, you know, a mentor. So it can be very helpful. And it's just a tool and it's just a way to get physicians again that maybe are not comfortable with any program within their institution, or maybe they don't have any programs at all and people don't know where to go and they're suffering. And so you can just go there. It's anonymous. It's free. You know, I mean, it's confidential really, but you know, we don't report to anybody. You can keep the camera off, your name off, and nobody has to know who you are, but somebody's there to talk to you. And when you talk to anybody, coach, therapist, friend, you always feel better. I mean, you always do, because you're sort of like saying it aloud just releases that energy, that charge, that anger, that frustration. And human connection is a huge, important thing for humans to thrive and survive. And especially if you are in apathy, which is the lowest sort of vibration and very common in burnout when you're in apathy, social connection is the one really important thing that can get you out of it. So that sometimes is a marker that you need social connection, whether it's a, let's say, call it a stranger, but it wants to help you, or it's time for you to call a friend, call your aunt, call your cousin, call anybody, spend that, you know, physical or phone time with somebody to get out of apathy. And so it's just really important to have that connection. And from a peer, somebody that has been through the same things, you know, as you. So many of the coaches there themselves have gone through burnout. And so the thing is, like, you can come out of it. There is hope. You know, I've been through it and it gets dark and it gets ugly and it gets scary. And it's really dark. and it's really painful physically. You know, I had the physical stuff, but it can affect you mentally. You could get anxious and depressed and again suicidal. And so you can get out of it. But the first step is have awareness. The second step is get help, you know, and then do something. Have the courage to say, my life matters. I'm worthy. I'm worthy to get care. I'm worthy to not fall in the trap of like suicide. So, you know, it's just really important to believe that, that you're worthy, that you matter, and to get the courage to take a step of action.
I was wondering if you ever had, again, a physician, you know, during this program or this service, tell you something they want, just again that empathy, but also, hey, this is what's happening to me right now. Is this normal, or should I be expecting this? And you would be like, oh God, no, that's horrible, that's toxic.
Yeah, I mean, we you try not to sort of, like as a coach, you try not to, you know, sort of kind of get in the situation with them emotionally. You really just help them sort of for themselves figure out these things. I mean, of course, some things are blatantly, you know, damaging or, you know, bad situations for sure.
You would think that though, right? But yeah, remember, aren't they so programmed? Like, hey, this is how it is. This is what's normal.
Correct. Like,
that's but how these horrendous things happen, right?
Yeah. But it's just, you know, trying to just really help them, you know, realize it without putting in judgment. Yeah. For them, it's like to realize it. But of course, we want to tell them, like, you know, you're not alone. Like, we see this all the time. You know, many people are going through it, but is that to say that then you should be in a situation that is harmful to you or detrimental to you just because that's the way many people have experienced it? You want to get out of situations that are harmful to your health, or, you know, just like that physician you talked about, that it was a tipping point. He said, no more, you know? So yeah, sometimes you have to remove yourself from places that are not going to change. They're toxic, you know, physician wellness or whatever is not a priority. We're just, you know, a number in the cogwheel. Mm-hmm. Okay, we may not change many institutions, but it doesn't mean because it's bad you should stay. You know, you need to take care of yourself and either go somewhere else, take some time, you know, really reevaluate.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want? What are your priorities? What are your values? Do you want to be that in that environment? You know, and then what does it say about you that you're willing to stay in some place that is that's toxic and you're putting up with abuse, basically?
That's awesome.
But, you know, what does it say about you and your kids and your family? They pick up on that. They know that you stayed, you know, just like if it was an abusive husband, you stayed. You're teaching that to your children. They're not deaf. They're not blind. They know this, even if they're little. So you're teaching a lot of things with your actions or inactions.
Yeah, no, that is so important. That's true. Like in so many different aspects and everything too. Yeah, there's definitely a lot going on there and everything. And also I've done episodes in the past too about like self-care, and guess it can definitely be good, but there's times where I feel like as an employee, you just got to get out of the situation. Like you could have a stressful boss, for example, work 80 hours a week, this and that. And my thing is like self-care is not going to do jack with you because of all the work you're doing, whatever, like that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, basically burnout, which is a chronic stress, is like you're always like on the go. You're always worried. You're always like more things, more work, not enough time to just have time to stop, to rest, to like go do stuff that is fun for you, you know, whether it's, you know, working on your cars, or whether it's just like hiking or playing music or dancing or writing or reading or things that you really enjoy that are going to, you know, just make you be in a calm state. Like if you were at the beach, what would you be doing? What would you be thinking about? Maybe it's the books you like. So you want to do those activities that maybe before you got to medical school or training or in any specialty or profession that really was a passion for you. You know, do those things. Those are really, really important. Like, is it running? Is it, you know, whatever it is for you, you have to do that to stop that stress cycle. If you don't stop the stress cycle, and it has to be daily because the stressors are everywhere, you know, then you're going to just bring yourself to the ground, and then you're going to be in burnout. You're going to be totally in freeze mode, you know, just collapse. And then it's a little too late, you know, when you now, you know, how many physicians like drop dead at 45, 50 of a heart attack?
Yep.
Oh, but they were so dedicated, always working late. Well, yeah, you're always stressed. You're always working. You never took time for you. And so, of course, you're going to drop dead from stress. chronic stress leads to, again, your heart rate going up, your blood pressure going up, and that affects your heart. And yeah, you're going to fall over and die. So, you know, it's real, the stress. It's real, the diseases that we get from it. So if you don't address it, it's going to address itself at a very inconvenient time.
No, a little side conversation, but regarding COVID, do you think like that was one of the few benefits of COVID, is where not just doctors, but a lot of professions actually got time to like stop and reflect and not work? Like, hey, is this what I want to do with my life? What do I really want to do with my life?
Absolutely. I think this is a great, great, great silver lining. Like, what a gift, what an opportunity. Of course, it's devastating. And, you know, so many people died, of course. The devastation was there. But the silver lining about that or anything in life is, with anything that, you know, we deem as bad, you know, there's always something very good. There's something mm-hmm. we can learn from every situation. And these are learning opportunities to pause. I mean, people were forced to pause globally. Like, you have to stay home and like figure this stuff out. And then what do you do when you just have to sit there in silence or without doing? You kind of have to think about some of these bigger questions, which sometimes you think about when it's a midlife crisis, existential crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start thinking like, what do I want in my life? You know, what's important? Who am I? Like, what do I want to do? Is this job, place, husband, you know, relationship the right one? Because if I die tomorrow, you know, was it worth it? And people mm-hmm. were in some ways very much confronted with their own mortality, or, you know, they saw it in other people. And so what's going to be important if you die? So that was, I think, a great time to pause and think. And many people did. And that's, I think, why many physicians left medicine, because mm-hmm. they paused and said, oh, yeah, I'm going to die anyway, or I almost died. And so why am I here? I mm-hmm. want to pursue something else in or outside of medicine. I want to become an entrepreneur. So many entrepreneurs boomed as physicians. So many people became coaches. Yep. You know, they did so many things because they had that time to reflect, pause, and say, oh, yeah, this is not good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you 100%.
And to reframe the question again, those were the ones who got to do that, were like me and other small percentage, like we had to work the whole time through COVID. But yeah, just let everyone know.
Yeah, and then, you know, absolutely. And then many didn't have the time. And I think, you know, we have to respect and really acknowledge, yeah, all the ER physicians or ER staff, all the mental health, all the grocery people, all the people that were bus drivers that were still working, you know, and the trauma that they endured. Well, many of us, let's say, were home or we were remote or Zoom. And so, yeah, I didn't have that bravery. There's no way. I mean, I don't have that bravery. I was not that hero to say, let's go or volunteer in the front lines with like no mask. I mean, that takes a different type of courage that many people showed. And then now people are like, oh, whatever, you know, but like people like were really, really dying, you know, when there was no vaccines, there was nothing. And they had to see that. And I've talked to so many nurses that, you know, experienced so much death that nobody has ever experienced. And they were, you know, with the iPads and their families were dying and they were like, I cannot do this. I need to leave, you know, ICU care and do other type of nursing because I'm still traumatized to this day. I mean, they tell me. So we haven't processed all that grief, that trauma, but so many people got to really reevaluate what we're going to do in your stage of life. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Diana, I had so much fun with you being on the show and everything, but I have to ask you one final question. What do you plan to be your future goals in life? Let's say in the next 5 years or so, do you want to do more with your website, or do you want to work on another project perhaps? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's been so, such a wonderful journey, really, because I think my burnout was long and very painful, but it was also a great gift as well. Where I then got to meet so many people, talk to so many people, you know, be in so many podcasts, write to heal, speak at conferences about this, which is so important. And it really has been a gift. And I really, really enjoy it. And it really fills me up. I mean, these conversations to me are really soul filling. They're so, you know, so important to me. For other people to realize you're not alone, you know, please take step in your own self care and your worth, make boundaries, really to really hammer it down. And sometimes they may have to hear it 10 times until it clicks, and that's okay. And when it clicks, I hope that it, you know, it doesn't, you make a change for the positive. And I don't know who it would change or who it'll impact, but the person that does, that's a really important person that we want to reach. So to me, doing this and talking and presenting and doing small groups or, you know, coaching, to me, this is really fulfilling. And I really think that was, for me, I mean, during COVID as well, it was like my spiritual crisis. You know, what do I want to do? What am I good at? What do I enjoy? What gifts do I have that I can, you know, share with others? And so really, to me, this has been it. I mean, it gets me up in the morning. I work really late to really promote, you know, physician coach support, because I believe in it. I believe, you know, for there should be a place for people to go to. And the people that have used it have really said it was really beneficial. The coaches said it was really beneficial. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's challenging because it's changing a culture of people getting or asking for help. And so, you know, it's different than people that know I want coaching and they're going to go get a coach. This is people that, yeah, it's hard to, let's say, convince them that your care is important, but it doesn't matter. Like, the people that come are hopefully the people that will get from a terrible place to a much better place, to maybe starting like a seed, planting that seed of like, okay, like, you know, what do I need to do? Or like, she said something that changed how I thought about it, and, you know, I'm going to do something different. So to me, really, this next, you know, 5, really 7 years of really a lot more, you know, growth to really expand this message and continue to do so, because it's not going to change overnight. It's going to take a lot of repetition. Yes, for people to embrace it, but people to hopefully give them the courage too, to speak up, to say, this person is speaking up, I'm going to speak up in my own micro, like, cosm and in my workplace, or, you know, in my relationships, or I'm not going to put up with this abuse. Again, work, relationship, anything it is. And then, you know, take care of you and put yourself first, because it's not narcissistic. It is not selfish. Right. It's absolutely, like, essential.
No, that makes so much sense. It really does. Yeah. Well, again, this has been awesome. And another thing, if any of my audience members want to get a hold of you, is there an email or a website they could use to make contact with you?
Yeah, they can go to my personal website. It's Diana Londoño, which is my last name, MD, like medicaldoctor.com. You can find me on, you know, social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. I'm the same name, Diana Londoño, MD. You can also just check out physiciancoachsupport.com. And there's a lot more information and, you know, how to get a hold of me, but just about the program. And if you're a physician, if you know a physician that, you know, is angry, reactive, apathetic, cynical, you know, that's a big one. If you're just cynical in a soapbox all the time, you know, you're probably in burnout. And definitely if you're withdrawn, getting depressed, you know, not taking care of your, you know, self-care, you know, you're really in a place where you need to reach out for help. And that could maybe be a first step. There's other resources there for other programs. So please, if ours doesn't fit, look at the other ones, but start somewhere to really take care of yourself. Or again, a therapist. Psychology Today has great resources of therapists, psychiatrists, you know, social workers, you know, anybody. And thankfully for physicians in many states, and I know in California, you don't have to disclose that you got any mental health help unless it interferes with, let's say, your job. So, you know, if you get help, there's nowhere to disclose it. You know, it's still, you're going to be able to keep your license, keep your privileges in the hospital. So please, please take care of yourself. Take that step to make an appointment, you know, with anybody.
Well, great. And again, Dan, thank you so much. It was a true honor and pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much. And thank you for what you're doing and, you know, all the information of all the topics you cover, you know, so interesting. And, you know, I've listened to the podcast and there's a lot to learn and definitely some very interesting people to connect with and all these advances. So thank you for everything you're doing as well.
You're welcome. Thank you. I again want to thank Diana for being an awesome and amazing special guest. She brought so much great information and content to the episode, and it was a true blessing to have her on. So I just want to thank all of my listeners for your support, and just to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. And if anyone has any further questions for me, you can reach me at my email address, behaviorhealthintegration121@gmail.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jacob Minig, where you will find more educational posts on psychotherapy, trauma, and addiction. And finally, you can follow me on my website, which is behaviorhealthintegration.org. I also want to inform everyone that there is a great new device out there called Calmigo. It's a breathing device meant to control and manage your breathing rates and the depth of your breathing as you inhale and exhale to, again, help relieve any type of anxiety and stress-like symptoms. And if you do put the BHI podcast into the promo code, you get $30 off this amazing device. It is a once-in-a-lifetime deal, and you will not be disappointed. All right, everyone. Until next time, have a good day. Bye.